Welcome to The Patriot, 1776. Hi, this is John Mady, and I am the pastor of Victory Baptist Church in North Fort Myers, Florida. And who is the Patriot of 1776? You are, and I am, and so is everyone who loves America and wants to follow the principles of our founding fathers. The last sentence of the Declaration of Independence reads like this: "And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." If it had not been for the Patriots of 1776, we would still be paying taxes to England and drinking a spot of tea at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Help us win back America now, just like the Patriots of 1776 won America in the first place. You should take notes and use your Bible. We will give you our mailing address later. 2 weeks ago, we talked about The Law by Friedrich Bastiat, and that was for 1850. And now today, we're going to move forward to 1859. Something happened in 1859 that deals a lot with what's going on in America today. And that happening was that Clarence Darwin wrote his book, had his book published on the origin of species. Now, what I'm going to do first of all is to read to you the full title of Darwin's book. The full title of Darwin's book is, quote, "On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life," unquote. You've probably not heard that before. Not very many people have. But that's the full title of the book. And you would think that Darwin's book, The Origin of Species, has to do with biology. In reality, it doesn't. It has to do with more of the last part of that title, The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. And that is quite a title. And what it boils down to, if you read the whole book, it's a racist book. Charles Darwin gave ammunition to people who didn't want to believe in God. And he also gave ammunition to people to become racist. And so we're going to read some of the things that are said about that. And this is concerning the theory of evolution. So we'll begin reading and making comments as we go. Quote, "The theory of evolution is not a scientific law or a law of biology. A scientific law must be 100% correct. The theory of evolution will never become a law of science because it is wrought with errors. This is why it is called a theory instead of a law. The process of natural selection is not an evolutionary process. The DNA in plants and animals allows selective breeding to achieve desired results. Dogs are a good example of selective breeding. The DNA in all dogs have many recessive traits. A desired trait can be produced in dogs by selecting dogs with a particular trait to produce offspring with that trait. This specialized selective breeding can continue for generation after generation until a breed of dog is developed. This is the same as the survival of the fittest theory of the evolutionists. Many different types of dogs can be developed this way, but they can never develop a cat by selectively breeding dogs. Natural selection can never extend outside of the DNA limit. The DNA cannot be changed into a new species by natural selection. The same process of selective breeding is done with flowers, fruits, and vegetables. New variations of the species are possible, but a new species has never been developed by science. In fact, the most modern laboratories are unable to produce a left-handed protein as found in humans and animals. Evolutionists fail to admit that no species has ever been proven to have evolved in any way. Evolution is simply pie-in-the-sky conjecture without scientific proof. The following proofs will show that evolution is not a scientific fact. The reverse will be proven. Evolution is scientifically impossible. Evolution is simply a theory that was developed by Charles Darwin before science had the evidence available to prove the theory false. His famous book, On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, has a title that is now known to be scientifically false. New species cannot evolve by natural selection. Modern scientific discoveries are proving evolution to be impossible. No new scientific discoveries have been found to prove the theory of evolution. Life did not start with a bolt of lightning striking a pond of water as claimed by evolutionists. That is pure childish fantasy. Evolution is simply a myth. Children believe the theory of evolution because they have been brainwashed by the educational system. Kids are taught that life can evolve given enough time. This is a false statement without any scientific support. They are taught if given enough time, a monkey at a typewriter could punch keys at random and eventually type President Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. This is nonsense. These government-educated kids actually believe this nonsense. Time does not make possible things, Time does not make impossible things possible. Evolution is a religion, the worship of a make-believe time god. Supporters of the theory of evolution act as if it has scientific support, which it does not. Evolutionists switch tactics when they are pressed against the wall with solid scientific proofs against the theory of evolution as presented below. They back off, stating that evolution is only a theory. Using this flip-flop approach, they try to have it both ways. They claim that scientific support when none exists. They claim it is only a theory when their beliefs are proven to be outlandish, impossible conclusions that violate scientific truths. Evolutionists simply believe reality, slink into denial, and walk away when presented with the scientific facts listed below. People who believe in evolution have been brainwashed. Their main problem is not the arguments for and against evolution and creation. Their problem is they can't bring themselves to reject evolution because they have already rejected God. The educational system teaches children not to think. Any student who uses logic and science and solid scientific evidence to question the theory of evolution is ridiculed and insulted into submission. The students who submit become non-thinking robots who dare not question the dogma presented. The educational system on the university level in all English-speaking countries brings brainwashing to perfection. Many generations have lived and died having been brainwashed into believing that extraterrestrial life forms must have evolved and must exist somewhere. They search in vain for life elsewhere in the solar system and universe. They research in vain trying to prove the theory of evolution. They get PhDs, become professors, and teach the next generation the same unproven and impossible ideas. The brainwashed individual rarely understands his own condition, and no means exist for his reprogramming. They read scientific facts presented here, but the brainwashed brain is in lockdown mode, unable to replace nonsense with true scientific facts. They feel this strange mental state of confusion where the brain simply locks up and the eyes gloss over out of focus as they stare at nothing. This is why they call it brainwashing. Universities are centers of higher brainwashing. Are left-wing liberal professors mentally nuts? Well, yes. An eminent psychiatrist claims those who possess a liberal ideology are suffering from a clinical mental disease. And in his book, based on strikingly irrational beliefs and emotions, modern liberals relentlessly undermine the most important principles on which our freedoms were founded, says Dr. Lyle Rossiter, author of the new book, The Liberal Mind, The Psychological Causes of Political Madness. Like spoiled, angry children, they rebel against the normal responsibilities of adulthood and demand that a parental government meet their needs from cradle to grave. Unquote. And universities are turning America into a nation of idiots, fat, drunk, and stupid. And then we go on to someone who just less than 2 years later made his stand against Darwinism. And he proved that the theory of evolution is not true. This man's name is Louis Pasteur. And if you were to check on his life and check on him as a scientist, you'll find that he is one of the greatest scientists that we've ever had. And so let's read a little bit about him and see what it says about him. Louis Pasteur was a French chemist and microbiologist who developed the first vaccines for rabies and anthrax. He is also credited with the invention of the technique of treating milk and wine to stop bacterial contamination, a process named pasteurization, after him. One of the pioneers in the field of microbiology, Pasteur, along with Ferdinand Cohn and Robert Koch, is regarded as one of the three main founders of bacteriology. Born as the son of a tanner who had served in the Napoleonic Wars, Louis grew up listening to his father's patriotic tales, which instilled in him a deep love for his country. As a young boy, he loved to draw and paint, but his parents wanted him to focus on his studies. He was an average student who even failed in his first attempt to clear the entrance exam for college, though he eventually went on and completed his doctorate. In his career as a chemist, he disproved many of the long-held erroneous scientific beliefs, such as the concept of spontaneous generation. He received international acclaim for developing the first vaccine against rabies for his seminal work in the field of germ theory. Although much renowned for his groundbreaking scientific works, Pasteur's life has been the subject of several controversies. Now, the thing that we're most interested in, what we just read, is it says that he disproved many of the long-held erroneous scientific beliefs, such as the concept of spontaneous generation. Now, spontaneous generation is something that Darwin really hung on to and claimed as being a very big part of his theory of evolution. And so we go on and we'll read about this just a little bit more. And this is an article about Louis Pasteur again, another article. And here we go. In May 1861 is a date that probably doesn't ring a bell or cause any light bulbs to go off in terms of huge scientific events. In the United States, people weren't thinking too much about science. The Civil War was only 5 weeks old, and Union and Confederate gunships were trying to no avail to capture the Chesapeake Bay. In England, Charles Darwin's On the Origin of Species had already been in circulation for a year and a half, leaving scientific revolution and controversy in its wake. And in Paris, a chemist named Louis Pasteur presented an experiment in front of his colleagues at the Paris Society for Chemistry that would turn the scientific world and much of what we believed on its head. Prior to Pasteur's experiment, a belief called spontaneous generation was a prevalent scientific method to explain how life came to be. This belief outlined that life can essentially arise from anything, even out of thin air. So if a piece of meat spoiled, the cause of the spoilage simply materialized from the air. What Pasteur did was put the belief of spontaneous generation to rest with a simple yet brilliant experiment. Pasteur boiled some nutrient broth inside a flask with a long twisted neck. The flask, while still open to the air, did not allow any microbes to enter the main area of the flask where the sterile broth was. Any bacteria in the air couldn't pass through the long neck of the flask to get to the broth inside. No bacteria meant no contamination, and the broth stayed sterile for one whole year. Pasteur then broke the neck of the flask and exposed the broth to the microbe-filled air, which contaminated the broth in short order. Life comes from life. What is the ultimate impact of Pasteur's experiment? Well, he didn't win the Nobel Prize for it, for the first Nobel Prize prizes were awarded in 1901, and Pasteur died in 1895. But what did happen, there came a shift in attitude regarding how life came to be. The idea that life comes from life is now one of the major tenets of biology. And so Darwin tried to say there was such a thing as spontaneous generation. In other words, you could get life from non-life. But Louis Pasteur proved that that was not true. And he proved that life comes from life. And so that today is still one of the things that is very true. You cannot get life from a rock. You can stand there for 10 million years and you can't get life from a rock. But evolutionists believe, oh yes, you can. And so they will stand there for 10 million years and they will still be standing there for another 10 million years waiting for that life to come from that rock. But it won't come, because life does not come from non-life. And that's what spontaneous generation is. Probably something you ought to write down, probably something that you ought to do some research on. Spontaneous generation, because that is a big thing in evolution. And Louis Pasteur proved that life does not come from non-life, but rather life comes from life. Now, there's another thing that goes along with this, and this is an article by Douglas W. Phillips, Esquire. And he's talking about, do laws and standards evolve? Now, I'm not sure how much time we'll have to really get into this, but we can get started on it. But let me just say a few things about it. And that is that Darwinism, and you can look up and look for what social Darwinism is. Social Darwinism is what the leadership of the Democrats follow today. We're going to start reading about a couple of people who actually use social Darwinism to go through politics. And we could just name a couple of those people real quick. Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., Margaret Sanger, Baldwin, I can't remember his first name just now, we'll get it later, Richard Baldwin, I think it is. But these are people who used social Darwinism. And we can say the same thing about a couple of our presidents, and we'll get to them and talk about them and see why it is that it just could not work out right with social Darwinism. So now, let's get at least a little bit of this done, see how much we can get done of this. It's a very good writing, and this writing comes from the Institute for Creation Research. And you can look that up. It's under www.icr.org. Let me say it again. www.icr.org. And that'll give you a lot of good information. And the ICR stands for Institute for Creation Research. All right, let's do some reading. Every intellectual and cultural battle is won or lost in the assumptions. He who defines wins. Unquote. Let's just say this. The Democrats do a lot of that. They do the defining, and men and women in Congress, in the House, and in the Senate, they just go along with it. They just fight the definition. And like it says here, he who defines wins. Democrats do a lot of defining, and the Republicans just kind of fight against what they say, fight against the definition. And so that's a place where we get into a lot of trouble. All right. What I'm going to do is, since that was so close to the beginning, I'm going to start it over. Every intellectual and cultural battle is won or lost in the assumptions. He who defines wins. The controversy between evolution and biblical creation is about much more than fossils and ape men. It concerns the basic presuppositions by which our society would answer questions concerning life, law, and human relations. Most importantly, it is a battle over lordship. Who is Lord, God or man? For much of this century, Darwinian evolution has appeared victorious in the cultural battle. The theory of evolution has done far more than just reshape America's biology textbooks. It redefined the nature of the debate. Darwin offered modern man the same question which the serpent posed to Eve. Hath God said, thereby declaring man the ultimate source of authority. The results have been devastating. Our society has declined to the point where Christianity is excluded from the public arena. Parents may kill their own 9-month-old baby in the womb, and the lawlessness of homosexual marriage is openly debated by legislators. Many Christians disapprove, but when challenged to defend their position, they are quickly silenced by protests that morality is not the proper domain of politics. The way in which a society addresses such controversies is directly related to how it answers the following three foundation questions. Can man legislate morality? If so, by what standards should man legislate? And does this standard evolve? The answer to each of these questions is determined by one's approach to origins. By convincing large numbers of Christians that law is morally neutral, the human reason is the arbitrator of truth, and that standards change as cultures mature, Darwinism has neutralized the restraining influence of Bible Christianity on culture. While many Christians resist formal acceptance of the evolutionary hypothesis, they have implicitly accepted the assumptions on which the theory rests. And we're going to stop there in our reading, but this is so important because the things that they say, the morality, they say, don't you shove your morality down our throats. But at the same time, they're not telling us, but they're shoving their morality down our throats. Well, I ask the question, whose morality should we have, theirs or ours? So comes the end of today's message. We appreciate so much that you spent time to be with us. If you enjoy our program, would you please take time to send us any questions you might have, along with a love offering of any amount? And if you send at least $25, we will send you a 92-page book, When Good Men Do Nothing, Who Will Speak? Our address is The Patriot, 1776, at 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Again, The Patriot, 1776. The address is 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Talk to you again next time. Goodbye now.